The Canucks drop another game at home, and the team is still searching desperately for any sort of offensive spark. It's the Canucks Hour here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, joined as always by my co-host, the senior writer for The Athletic, covering the Vancouver Canucks, Thomas Drantz. Canucks Hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. And Drantzer, it was only a few days ago, earlier this week, that everyone around the Canucks was so excited for the team to get back to Rogers Arena, playing in front of fans in the regular season for the first time in forever. There was so much excitement, so much hype. The game against Minnesota was a letdown. The game last night against Philly was a letdown. That was not a pleasant, fun, exciting, whatever your adjective was. That was a drag to watch as a hockey game, first and foremost.
Yeah, it was a little joyless. And you know what? This Canucks team generally, because their top six isn't going, right? There's not a lot of swagger. Like, I think about that 4-on-4 shift in the second period where Brock Besser started making moves, right? And asserting himself. And it looked like it looked fun. It looked like him and Quinn Hughes, there was some interplay there. It looked fun for them. And it was like, that was the first time I felt like those guys were having fun all season. And it's because they had the puck. And it's because they had some space. And it's because they were able to, you know, do some of the things that that we thought had a chance to make this team special going into the season. But now we're 10% of the way through, and there's just not a ton going on. Like, other than Bo Horvat attacking off the rush sometimes, right? Other than the occasional bit of craftiness from Connor Garland, there's just not a ton going on offensively for this team 5-on-5. And it's not just not winning them games. Like, it's not just causing them to be on the wrong end of one-goal games more often than not because they can't get that extra goal. It's also kind of joyless to watch.
That's a good word for it, right? And I was thinking flat, lifeless, you know, just no energy. It was all of those things. And it's concerning. It's concerning for a number of reasons. It's interesting because, as you said, you know, with the talent that they have in the top six, and if you had polled people who follow the team, who are fans, who cover the team in the offseason, going into the season, I don't think a lot of people would have said that this is going to be a boring team to watch, right? A lot of people might have said they're going to struggle to win games, but I don't think a lot of people expected it to be boring, right? Like, the kind of book or the conventional wisdom for the Canucks was, yeah, they're going to score goals, but they're going to have lots of problems defending. You know, they could be playing a lot of 4-3, 5-4
games. Score their problems!
Yes. And instead, it has just been, there's just not a lot to hang your hat on, right? Like,
no.
That game last night, all the scoring happens early in the game, and then Philly didn't get a lot, didn't generate a lot going forward, and the Canucks just weren't able to find that gear that we kind of expected them to have. You know, we talked in the show yesterday, Drantzer, the Canucks had the day off on Wednesday, and we kind of said, okay, that's Travis Green trying to set up his club to have a rest advantage over the Philadelphia Flyers, who, of course, had played the previous night in Edmonton. And they won that game, but still, you know, you're traveling. It's a back-to-back on the road. The Canucks, theoretically, should be the much more well-rested team. That certainly didn't develop out of the gate. You could maybe say that started to come to bear in the second period.
But I would say it did work, because over the last 40 minutes, as the game wore on, the Canucks were clearly the stronger side. Right? But you have to be sharp out the gate to make sure that advantage matters.
You have to be sharp out of the gate, but even the times when theoretically that advantage materialized, you know, we've all seen periods where one team is just completely tilting the ice and dominating and throwing everything at the other team. That wasn't the second period.
No.
Like, it was nice. They played well, but it wasn't, oh my goodness, how is Philly still in this game? It was never like that. If that's the top gear for the Canucks, that's a big, big problem.
Totally. It was not a kitchen sink second period.
Not even
right?
close.
Yeah.
No.
There is no Martin Jones highlight, you know, that you're going to see on SportsCenter where you were like, absolute larceny. Like, no, you're right. They played well, but they ultimately didn't do enough to generate the goal they needed. And, you know, there was just so many moments. Like, the stat that I can't get out of my mind is two shots on goal with Elias Pettersson on the ice, their number one center in the last two games. Like, on this homestand, two shots on goal, 12 against 2-4. That's kind of the story for this team right now. The top end, like, you know, we were talking about things like their defense needs to be just good enough so that their talent matters.
Yeah.
And right now it actually is. Like, their defense is at the level where you'd say it's been just good enough that if their offensive talent is clicking, is dangerous, is lethal at all, you know, they should be able to outscore the problems. They should be able to win enough games. And the way that it's going right now, you know, it's just not. Like, it's the thing that we were most confident that this team had that isn't clicking for them. Like, it is the top players. It is the top six. It is their top offensive talent not really coming to bear and making an impact on games. And far too often, they don't even look threatening.
Yeah.
Like, they're not even connecting passes. So, you know, again, it's one of those weird things where 10% into the season, we'd look at that and say, well, you know, that's a better problem to have than that your defense is a problem, because we're not sure you have the personnel to fix that, right? Whereas this is just a matter of waiting for Pettersson to shake off the rust, waiting for the bounces to come. And they have been a little bit unlucky offensively. They were a little bit unlucky offensively last night. They were worth 2.5 expected goals, and they only got one. But it doesn't change the fact that, you know, like, they might have time. Pettersson might have time in the grand scheme of things to round into form, but if this team wants to get off to the start they need to be a playoff team, urgency must come now.
And I think urgency is an important word here, because, you know, if that performance last night in isolation is not a, you know, hit the panic button, oh my goodness, what is wrong with this team type of performance, right?
No.
Like, if they turn that in, you know, in a midweek game in Columbus in January, okay, everyone just kind of shrugs your shoulders and you move on, right? It's the fact that it's coming as part of a pattern that is the most concerning thing, right? And in particular, you would think, again, I started off the show by saying we talked so much about the energy and the passion that was going to be in the building for these games, with fans finally having the chance to get back in the stands. And the hope would be that the team is able to feed off of that energy, to feed off of that passion. And instead, you know, in both games, they've really kind of sucked the life out of the building for long stretches by not being able to generate anything. And you could tie it back to some of the performances we saw on the road from this team as well. Again, if they, every team is going to have flat games throughout the course of an 82-game season. That's fine. But for a team that should be feeling a sense of urgency, for a team that, you know, had the opportunity to make a statement in front of their home fans and is still trying to craft its identity, it was really shocking to me that they weren't able to have more life right out of the jump last night. That might be the most concerning thing for me, is that you've got a tired team coming in, you're rested, you're still looking for that first win at home. These are all important games for you, and it was just so lifeless right from the opening whistle.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think the energy is definitely a concern, although the work rate isn't. Like, I don't feel like this is a product of the team not working. I just feel like it's a product of the team not executing at all. You know, and there's a famous, like, I don't know why I always think of this, but there's a famous Bud Poile quote, and Bud Poile was, of course, the first ever general manager of the Vancouver Canucks, where someone had asked him about his team's execution, and he responded that he was in favor of it, right? And
yes.
So I always think of that when I say execution. But the execution that this team has, like, I just don't feel like there's connectivity in terms of the players being predictable to one another. It feels like they struggle to do so much as connect 5 or 6 passes consecutively, and every time they do, it's a dangerous scoring chance, and it's like, right, like, that's what this team can do when their talent is firing. And, you know, I think about the Pettersson game last night, and I think about the way that, you know, he wasn't even controlling pucks. Like,
yeah,
at speed, he wasn't even controlling pucks. It just looked petrifying. Like, it looked petrifying in terms of the club's ability to generate anything momentum-wise offensively, and any push, any sort of, you know, lethal look at all. And that's, you know, really troubling, because, yeah, I mean, at some point he's going to figure it out. At some point this club's going to get some bounces in the offensive end of the rink. But at the same time, you know, their defense is probably not going to hold to this extent all season, right? Like, we saw in stretches of the first period that, you know, the Flyers started to generate some odd man stuff, that, you know, some of what we saw from this Canucks team in the past kind of resurfaced. And, you know, fundamentally, when you get into these one-goal games, like, what's been the difference here, right? It's that Claude Giroux makes an incredible bank pass. It's a goal, right?
Yeah.
Sean Couturier makes his shot on the rush.
Yep.
And the Canucks' best players don't have that moment in them to level it up.
Yeah, right.
And that's it. That's the difference right now in almost all of these one-goal games. And the Canucks are playing almost all one-goal games. They're not getting blown out. They're not getting trounced. It's not like last season where every game is five goals against.
No.
Like, this is different. But this is them coming out on the losing end of one-goal games because their game-breakers are in no way, like, they're not even cracking games, much
no.
less breaking
they're
them
not close.
Out. Right. No.
Pettersson, that was, I thought that might have been just the toughest performance to watch from Elias Pettersson last night, because as you said, there was no spark, there was no danger. It didn't even feel like he was on the cusp of doing something special, right? It just, it was just, he's just out there. He's just out there taking a shift, filling up space on the ice, and then not doing anything.
It barely felt like he was on the cusp of doing something ordinary.
Yeah, it really didn't. And I think it's a good point you make about, you know, it's not as if they're getting blown out. These aren't what you think of as classically, like, embarrassing performances.
No.
Where it's, you know, oh my goodness, burn the tape and move on. Like, that was the Buffalo game, but It hasn't been these games. That almost makes it more frustrating in a way, though, because you're going into the third period, you're down a goal, and you're thinking, this game is right there.
Yeah.
Like, Minnesota, Philly, they were not dominating these games. Those games are there for the taking for the Canucks, just begging for somebody to step up and kind of put their stamp on things, and no one's been able to do it so far. And it's Elias Pettersson, but, you know, people have texted this in. Well, okay, how about Brock Besser? How about JT Miller? That's fair at this point as well. Bo Horvat, I know he's had his moments. You could put him in that conversation.
But can you? I don't. I mean, I look at that rush. There's a rush in the third period where Bo Horvat just, like, you know, one-man wrecking ball through the neutral zone, gets in all alone, sends a perfect pass. Nils Höglander just can't. But, I mean, that's it. Like, with 5 minutes to go in a one-goal game, Bo Horvat's giving you a chance.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to give you a chance. He's going to give you one chance in the last 5 minutes, and he's going to do it all alone, just, like, down either wing or down the middle of the ice, because that's who Bo Horvat is. To me, that's a job well done. Like, what more can you ask for the guy, from the guy, than to give you one shot late, you know, with his best effort? He'll always do it. He does it every time. You know, one guy that I'm really not here for,
that's fair,
sort of having the finger pointed at, because I mean, he's got four goals, and individually, like, some of his lines haven't functioned that well. I thought the Höglander, Horvat, Pearson line was a big upgrade in terms of the 5-on-5 game that they were able to play.
Yeah.
I think we should see that again against Edmonton. I think we need to see that again against Edmonton. I think that's, like, the one line where all three guys kind of know what the other one's gonna do, and that pays off. So yeah, I mean, for me, we got to see that again. That's the one takeaway from the game where it was like, okay, there's something that works. And, you know, I asked Travis Green after the game, I said, you're changing your lines a lot. Like, are you just looking for answers? Like, are you just looking for anything that works?
Yeah.
And he, you know, basically said yes, and then pointed to the absence of Dowling, Dickinson, and Sutter, right? Bringing him down to only having four guys who are capable of playing
right.
center, and that complicates his ability to play the lotto line together and sort of limits his options to change things up. And, you know, I just thought to myself, like, I get it. Losing three centers is tough. But Dickinson, Dowling, and Sutter cannot change the outlook of how your club plays. Like, it can't. This club's still relatively healthy. Matthew Highmore going on IR and Nick Petan getting recalled. This club is still fundamentally healthy. Hamonic, Poolman, uncertainty on both. This club is still fundamentally healthy. Their best players are healthy. We haven't talked about a single top four or top six quality player in listing all these absences. Like, the team is healthy enough that they can't look like this, you know, as a result of their injuries. Like, they have to be able to grind out wins better than they have. They can't afford to lose three at home to start this season, which they're going to face the prospect of potentially doing when they face the best team in the Pacific right now on Saturday night.
And guys are coming in, filling in for these injuries and performing, right? Like, Justin Bailey has come in. It's not as if it's been a massive drop-off going from Dowling to Bailey.
You know, Lamico might have been their best forward.
Right. I understand. I understand that because Bailey's not a center, it complicates things a little bit, but it's not as if there's this. We talked so much about the depth, the credible depth that they assembled in the offseason, and I do think it's paying off. But to your point, that means that you cannot use the absences. Look, I get it. Center is so important. Losing Dickinson, it causes you to shake things up. I understand that. But that's not the reason that they are struggling right now. Lots and lots of responses coming in. Keep them coming. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, the smart alternative. Visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Again, the number is 650, 650. And, you know, we're talking about Elias Pettersson still, just another absent performance, I guess, is maybe the best way to say it. He just was not present, not making himself felt on the ice. The Church of Pettersson, no surprise here, is keeping a positive slant on things. He texts in, "You need to relax on Petey. He only played 26 games last year. He had an injury that ended his season. He is flashing quality and simply needs to get back into it. It will come back this homestand. Keep faith and confidence in him." And I've said several times now, I'm not worried about where Elias Pettersson is going to be in February. I think we're going to see the best version of Elias Pettersson at some point.
I don't even think it'll take that long.
Sure, but you know what I mean. At some point down the road, we're going to see the best version of Elias Pettersson.
No question.
How long does the team have to wait, though? That's the more pressing concern.
This is what
for me.
We keep talking about with the two tracks, right? It's like the track of, will Pettersson figure it out? Are we concerned in the big picture regarding what he is as a player? The answer is no. No, not at all. The track on which it's fair to be concerned is the track in which this team needs to take advantage of a relatively soft first half schedule. And this in particular moment right now, where they have, it's now 8 of the next 11 at home, yep, but all told, it's 10 of 13 at home. And they need to get off to a good start, especially because you know Vegas is going to come and figure it out, right? Like, you know that Calgary's looking like a juggernaut. You know that Alberta's rising in general. You know that the Vegas Golden Knights are going to figure it out. And so if you're going to keep pace and get one of those three spots, like, you need to put yourself in a position to hold a lead. This team clearly doesn't have the same gear that they're going to be able to rely on to close ground. You need to get off to a good start right now when your top players are all healthy, to a man healthy, and when you have a home-heavy part of your schedule and your schedule is easier, softer in the first half than the second half. Right now is when this team needs to start to rack up wins and get off to the start they need if they're going to reach the ambition that they've declared to be a playoff team.
And just look at some of the other performances they're getting that are good. Like Jaroslav Halak played well last night, right?
He did.
That's a game you could have won with your backup goalie. That's a great opportunity that they missed. You know what I mean? Oliver Ekman-Larsson has had a fantastic start to the season, right? If you had told people coming into this year that Connor Garland would have 8 points in 8 games and OEL would be playing like this, you'd be over the moon. You're like, oh my gosh, this team's going to really do some damage. I don't want to say wasted, but they haven't made the most of the opportunity of Oliver Ekman-Larsson having a really strong start to the year, right? You don't know how long that's going to continue. This is a great chance.
I think it's going to continue, though.
Sure, but you never know.
As much as I talk about connectivity and execution, right? And I almost feel a little bit bad for Ekman-Larsson right now because I feel like he's shown up so energized by his new opportunity.
I know.
Every pass he makes is perfect. He's throwing hits. He had 5 hits through 40 minutes and they were big hits. He had that huge hit on Zach McEwen. I was like, that looked painful. That was awesome. He's played so calm, so composed. He's moved the puck so well. And he's this oasis of calm, competent sort of connectivity. Awash in this otherwise desert, just arid desert where nothing is working for this team. I almost feel for the guy. It's such a funny experience to watch right now. And it makes a lot of sense, actually, when you kind of understand the dynamic that he personally is working through, where he's finally, I'm free. And then nothing else is working around him. It's
and
incredible.
Everyone else is just slogging away at it here.
Everyone else is just sloppy. It just looks sloppy from up top in the press box. I'm watching and I'm just there's just not a ton of calm, competent execution on the ice right now. And it's really tough to figure out, especially because for the most part, the players I'm talking about are not, we've spent so much time in this market talking about the depth and talking about the fourth line and talking about, if only the key players on this team were supported. And right now, the support stuff built around them is actually
working
okay.
It's working.
If it's not working, it's not hurting. Right, it's not actively crushing them the way it has in the past. And there's just not a ton there from the pieces we thought would carry this team.
Well, the fourth line set up the goal last night, right? A classic, just dump it in, forecheck, and it goes to the point and you score a goal.
More.
Right?
And
they were probably the most consistently effective unit the team had last night. And look, in a fourth line role, I don't want to get carried away.
We're not overselling.
No, I don't want to get carried away heaping praise on them. But you're right, it's not as if
You know, Juho Lamico's like my favorite guy, so it's easy for me to heap praise on Juho Lamico, but
you're Vancouver's number one Juho Lamico stan.
100% I am. I've long been a big Juho Lamico stan.
Lots more talk coming in about Pettersson and some of the other top players on the team. This one says, you could blame it on the pressure of a big contract for Pettersson. However, Hughes has been good, and Besser was lights out last year, so that excuse doesn't fly. And another one says, this is from David Langley. He says, isn't the slow start for Pettersson and Hughes a direct result of them missing training camp? Well, I would dispute that Quinn Hughes has had a slow start.
Quinn Hughes has not had a slow
just
start.
Fine.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's another interesting one, right? Because now every player is going to be different.
Yeah, I don't find this interesting at all. I find this completely predictable.
It's just, you know, one of them has been fine, good.
Really good. And I think he's been great.
Elias Pettersson has just been nothing like what we're used to seeing. So I don't think you can point to the missing camp as the factor necessarily, because it hasn't impacted Quinn Hughes.
I want to go on a small rant here, right? People are talking about, like, Pettersson, he's comfortable now. He's comfortable. He signed the big contract, right? And it's like, okay, the way that his contract is structured, right, he is not a $7 million player this season. He's a $4 million player this season. So first of all, when you're like, oh, he's not looking anything close to the 7.35, it's like, that's his cap hit. Salary is $4 million. Let's just facts matter in these cases. In terms of Pettersson versus Hughes, though, like, Hughes is the natural, right? Hughes is born to skate all day. They used to call him the worm in the GTHL because of the way he just burrowed about the ice, right? Like, he grew up, his brothers are both top five picks. Like, he grew up in this hockey family. His dad was the player development guy for the Maple Leafs. He has spent his entire life playing on the ice with top-end competition and being the shiftiest skater and, like, the naturally smartest player on every sheet of ice that he's ever been on, right? He is completely – he's also got this body. Like, he's going to play till he's 35, 36, 37, and he's still going to be one of the best skaters in the league. He's just got these natural gifts, and it's extremely natural. Pettersson, on the other hand, right, grew up, and the reason he – got so good was that his dad had keys to an ice rink in Anje, Sweden, like a small town outside of Sundsvall. So he was able to go, and he just enjoyed being on the rink, and he figured out a bunch of things that worked for him. Like, he broke his shot down into 12 component parts and mastered the art of it. He's cerebral. He's a nerd. Like, he's a savant where Quinn Hughes is natural. And for a player that's as precision-based as Pettersson, that's as reliant as Pettersson is on being like 2% faster, and I don't mean in terms of speed, I mean mentally.
Sure.
And in terms of control and in terms of technical skill than everyone else. Like, if Quinn Hughes is 2% off, he's still going to be able to skate all day. He's still going to be the best, shiftiest skater on the ice every time he hits it. If Elias Pettersson is 2% off, well, he's not the biggest guy. He's not the fastest guy, right? He's the smartest guy. And so if the guy who's got the sort of artificial intelligence, spatial problem solving thing going is 2% off, and all of a sudden they can't solve problems well enough, I mean, it shows an awful lot more than it does for your average player. And I think that's fundamentally what we're seeing with Pettersson as he shakes off the rust. I think it's that.
And this text comes in, what makes you so confident that EP is going to bounce back? I've not seen a single flash from him, not one deke, not one rush, not one incredible pass, not one top corner shot. He looks like he is skating in sand. Help me understand your perspective. I would disagree that there hasn't been any flashes from Pettersson. There have been dekes. There have been moments. Nowhere near the consistency you would expect. Now, I would agree that he looks tentative, certainly is probably the word I would use. But just to answer your question about where I get the confidence he's going to bounce back, his track record at the NHL so far in three seasons is really impressive. And I know he had the slow start last year, but then he did bounce back from that slow start, right? And he did get back to the level that he's established for himself to be a star level impact player in this league. So he has the track record. I know that it's frustrating. I do think he's going to get back there. But the big question is when. That is the big question right now for the Vancouver Canucks. It's the Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650. Myself, Jamie Dodd, and Thomas Drantz. Lots more to get into. We haven't talked about him yet, really, but tons of people are texting in 650, 650 about Travis
about the
Green.
Coach.
We will dive into that conversation. No surprise that some heat is coming in on Travis Green to the text message inbox. We'll get into that, share our thoughts on that topic. That's coming up next. It's the Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back. It is the Canucks Hour here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd, joined as always by my co-host, senior writer for The Athletic, covering the Vancouver Canucks, Thomas Drance. Canucks Hour is brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Being a champion takes foresight. Build your company to win for years to come with fuel-efficient and reliable Kubota skid steers, excavators, and loaders from Avenue Machinery. Visit avenuemachinery.ca. You can always get in on the conversation. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and plenty of you have chosen to do so. Lots and lots of questions, comments, reaction coming in off the heels of the Canucks. Lifeless, I think it's fair to say, disappointing 2-1 loss to the Philadelphia Flyers last night at Rogers Arena. Drancer, before we dive into the text message inbox too much here, I do have some notes from Canucks practice. They're just getting on the ice out at 8 rinks in Burnaby. Nick Petan on the ice, no surprise there. He was called up as Matthew Highmore was placed on IR. Tucker Poolman on the ice as well. He, of course, was a game-time decision for the Canucks last night, ended up not playing. Jason Dickinson also on the ice for the Canucks at practice today. So, you know, we talked about it in the first segment. It's not – the injuries certainly aren't an excuse, but you also understand the crunch at center and what that does to the lineup. I think it would make Travis Green's life a lot easier when he's trying to put some line combinations together if Jason Dickinson is able to get back sooner rather than later.
100%. And especially because it lets JT Miller play the wing, right? Like,
yep.
JT Miller gets to play the wing. He gets to play the wing with Pettersson. It helps them in the faceoff circle. It helps Pettersson in terms of driving play. Although Pettersson and Miller just, like, they just haven't worked together this season. It's so strange because they seem to have such a hive mind together, both in terms of generating off the rush and the cycle in that 19-20 season. Played pretty well together, even if it wasn't quite as prolific in 2021 before Pettersson went down with injury. Just nothing doing there right now. So we'll see, but, you know, it would probably help, too, if they were able to get a run of games. Like, it would help if there was a possibility for them to play an entire game together as opposed to needing JT Miller to play, you know, first line center or second line center while Pettersson plays third line center, because you just don't have enough centermen. Dickinson helps you address that issue. You know, I also think he gives you a guy to maybe play with Podkolzin at a level where Podkolzin
right.
can maybe actually, like, play a consistent role throughout the entire game. I thought it was his best game last night, by the way.
He was good. Yeah, we should talk about that a little bit. Because and he actually got some minutes, right? It wasn't like, oh man, he's disappeared from the game here. You know, he got about 10 minutes of 5-on-5. And I think, you know, 10, 11 minutes of 5-on-5 action for
Vasily
Podkolzin.
Yep.
That's nice. That's a good spot to be in. And you're right. I thought he had a pretty strong game.
He earned that. He was really assertive on the forecheck, forced some turnovers, made some nice passes. Like, that's been one thing, is a lot of his, like, pass attempts out front. You know, people are like, oh, and he almost hit that guy. And they, like, strike it as a positive. And I'm just watching it like, that means he didn't hit the guy and there was a better option.
You actually have to complete that pass. Yeah.
Like, your better option is to go up high and maintain possession or take the shot, or, you know what I'm saying? So, anyway, he actually hit some guys with some passes. Like, it feels like one of those things that he's figuring out. Like, just how hard it is to slip passes past guys. Just how hard it is to create space along the wall. You know, the biggest flaw in his game remains plays off the defensive side half wall, defensive zone half wall that connect plays in transition. That remains a work in progress. That's a really hard detail to master. Like, you know, there's other forwards on this team, other wingers on this team. There's a certain power forward I can think of that spent 8 years in Vancouver who never figured that part of the game out. So it's like, you know, you get some time there. You get some grace period from me while you work out those details. But I thought it was his best game by a lot
last night. Any sort of positive upward trajectory for Vasily Podkolzin is a big deal for the Canucks at this point. 100%. Right? Because they need that offensive spark.
And they need that size, man. Like, they need that assertive size. They need that pace. They need a depth player with some offensive touch. Like, they need Podkolzin to be... This top nine looks totally different with Podkolzin instead of Matthew Highmore. Totally different.
With a productive... trusted Podkolzin, it completely changes the complexion
Massive.
Of the forward group.
Massive.
All right, so I teased it just as we were heading into the break. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your text coming in. And lots and lots and lots of you have sent your thoughts in already about Travis Green. And we didn't really address Travis Green in the first segment. We wanted to save some time here towards the end of the show to get into it. And I'll just start by reading some of your texts on the matter. Mike in Victoria says, Travis Green needs to go before it's too late. We're already having a horrible start to this season. He can't coach this team anymore. Spenny on Bowen says, Time for the lens of ire, which is a nice turn of phrase. I enjoy that, Spetty. Time for the lens of ire to be turned squarely upon Green. Benching Garland was screwy. The time to fire him is long past. Cheryl texts in, would love to know your thoughts on Green's coaching. I am constantly frustrated with the line combos forever changing. No consistency, no chemistry, no plan. And We Go Grey Cup says, this team is not clicking. Green is on the bubble. I give him until Christmas to figure it out. And Dranser, look, in a Canadian market, in Vancouver specifically, if the team is not performing, if the results, and not just the results, but just the product overall, is not there on the ice, there are always going to be questions about the coach. That's just how it works here in Vancouver. Then you add on the fact that this is Travis Green's fifth season as the Canucks head coach. And that's a pretty long time in NHL terms to be at the coach of a team, especially with the lack of results overall. That nice season in 1920, going to the bubble and accomplishing something in the bubble. But outside of that, an overall lack of results in Travis Green's tenure. For you, when does the conversation about Travis Green's future with this team get serious? When does that become a legitimate talking point that a change might be made?
Beyond the fans.
Yes, beyond the fans.
Oh, I think we're a fair distance from that. But it's a talking point among the fans, and I think that's good. Like, I think it's good that this market is back to, you know, how many times have you heard talking about hockey or hearing hockey talked about growing up, like, it's a results-based business.
Yep.
It's a results-based business. It hasn't been a results-based business in this market in a decade. So, you know, the return of expectations, that's a good thing. You know, this is Travis Green's fifth season, right? The team never had any chance of making the playoffs until the 2019-20 season, right? They did that year, kind of. I mean, they made the play-in tournament. They won a couple rounds in it. You know, it was a good year. Honestly, it was a really good year. And then last season, 2021, the team didn't try to win. The organization did not try to win. And I think part of the reason there wasn't consequences in the wake of it was that the team hadn't tried to win, right? Like, they hadn't. They didn't spend. They didn't really try to, like, winning was not a priority. Depth was not a priority. And as things went sideways, I think that's why there were no consequences for key organizational leaders in terms of running it back this season. Now we're 10% into this season. The Canucks are, you know, what, they're 2 points or they have 7 points in 8 games, right? So not the start you want in 8 games, but I don't think it's been the catastrophe that a lot of fans think it has, at least from a tactical or deployment basis. I mean, for me, this is, you know, primarily based on the struggles of a bunch of top players. Like, this is, you know, not systems issues. This is not deployment issues. You know, Garland not playing yesterday. I mean, yeah, I guess, you know, you could point, there's always stuff you can point to, but also, you know, Garland wasn't noticeable at any point in the 11 minutes he played. And, you know, you can understand a coach sort of tweaking his lines accordingly. In terms of when does this get serious? I think for fans in this market, it's already a serious topic, right? Like, it's already a serious topic, and that's because fans have gone into the season thinking that this team was massively improved from the team. And, you know, I mean, personally, I just never bought that this roster was more than a bubble, like a fringe playoff team. And so far, they've performed the way a fringe playoff team might. You know, maybe they'd have 2 more wins. Yeah, I mean, you'd like to see them have something like 9 points in 8 games or 10 points in 8 games. But, I mean, there's a couple bounces here or there that would make them that, and it wouldn't fundamentally alter my assessment of the team, which is that I don't think this team has the defensive chops. Like, I don't think they have the personnel on the back end. You know, and I worry about the construction in terms of other key areas, you know, no right-handed centerman, penalty-killing personnel. Like, I worry about the team construction to the point that I just don't necessarily think they're a slam-dunk playoff team that's massively underachieving through 10% of the season. And so, you know, I think they're going to give Green and this team some time to figure it out. I think they should. I certainly think we're, you know, one texter said Christmas. I think, yeah, I mean, that seems about right to me. Maybe another month from now, it starts to be something that we're watching in a serious way. But for now, I think it's just the chat. Like, for now, I think it's fan chatter and fans expressing their dissatisfaction with the way the team is playing. And considering how joyless it is, considering how disconnected it is, considering how little swagger this team's top players, you know, have so far, I think it's a fair topic.
This text comes in echoing what you're just saying at the end there. Says, I don't think you can blame Green right now. It's not on him if the top players have no finish. No coach can control that. They're in game. They're in all the games till the end, so it's not Green's fault. They can't score. And that's a fair perspective as well. My take on Travis Green in his time here in Vancouver has been, for the most part, he's gotten the most out of these teams. Because you look early in his tenure, those are some really rough rosters to deal with. Really, really tough rosters to coach at the NHL level. He did a pretty good job of it, right? And at that stage in the trajectory of the Canucks franchise, it was more about, you know, shepherding Brock Besser into the NHL, which he did well. And, you know, it's always tough to assign credit to the player versus the coach versus the organization, but he brought in these young players and helped them have immediate success in the NHL. I do think we can debate how much the roster has improved, but it clearly has improved from last year, I would say.
Sure, yeah.
With the moves they made. So there are.
But has it improved from 1920?
That's an interesting question. And I think that is a very fair question to ask. Here's the thing. I don't think you can have the discussion about Travis Green's future with this club without also having the discussion about Jim Benning's future with
this
club, right? Because we all know the dynamic of general managers and coaches in the NHL. And as I said, Travis Green, this is his fifth season with the team. Jim Benning's been here longer than that, right? Like, he's been here 8 years. It'll be 9 years coming up at the end of this season that Jim Benning has been in charge of this team. And, you know, general managers, you only get to hire so many coaches, right? If theoretically Travis Green was to be let go and someone brought in, that would be Jim Benning's third coach that he hired for the Vancouver Canucks. It would surprise me to a certain extent if he was given the ability to do that. But I just look at the dynamic of whether people on the outside think this team is dramatically improved. The team did a lot of work to overhaul this roster and to shed itself of bad contracts and bring in new players that they are really excited about. And I just don't know. I don't know if they're going to be able to resist. If this team is still struggling to hang in the playoff picture in a month, in 6 weeks, we have seen it time and time again that NHL teams will pull the trigger and fire the coach looking for that quick impact of bringing in somebody new to save a team season, right? Like, that's something that happens in the NHL. And I'm just not sure if this franchise will be able to resist the temptation of doing that, even if there's no one single thing you can lay at the feet of Travis Green for why the team is underachieving.
Yeah, I mean, I think my sense of it would be that, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if Green, having just been extended, right, his term matches that of the general manager. There was a ton of heat around the general manager just a year ago, right, in February and January of last year when the team really got off to a rough start. And then again, a little bit toward the end of the season before the decision was made to have continuity and bring in the Sedin twins and extend Travis Green and run it back in terms of key leaders. You know, I don't know that this is a situation where it's as simple as does a general manager get to change the coach at any point. Like, I think because both have been here for so long, because the organization just committed 2 years to Green, you know, I think the decision-making process internally is going to be a little bit different than what's conventional in terms of assessing where this team's at and assessing what voice they need and what changes they need. So it's going to be a really interesting thing to monitor and watch in the event that the team continues to struggle. But overall, it's just too early. Like, this team is slowly building out the sample as we begin to move towards certainty of what they are, right? And it's like, right now we're looking at a team that is below average defensively, but by no means a train wreck, has strong goaltending, which we would have expected.
Yep.
And, you know, is really struggling to manufacture offense. And you know, of those sort of three things, like, what's the most likely to change? They're probably going to start to score more. Like, yep. They're probably going to not be the worst offensive team at 5-on-5 in hockey over the course of a full season, considering their personnel. And so, you know, We kind of just need to see more games. Like, we kind of need to just give this a little bit of time to play out. And that's frustrating, I think. I'm sure that's frustrating for fans to hear because they've been waiting forever for this team to turn any type of corner. And because by the time we have some certainty about what this team is, like, one thing I think we know is that they're not elite. They're not a team that's going to be able to go on the 25-4-3 type run that you need to close the gap if you fall behind early. Like, they need to be setting a decent pace here right now. And so they don't really have a ton of time to figure it out as we wait to figure them out and see, and see, you know, have them show us exactly who they are as a group.
Gurjeet texts in, guys, with people saying fire Green, who replaces him? What decent coaching candidates are out there? Torts, he's not coming back. Not many good names. This may also figure into the decision. That's always part of it, certainly. And that's part of it, whether you're talking about general manager, when you're talking about a coach, right? You don't fire someone usually unless you have a pretty good idea of who you want to bring in to replace them. Certainly not mid-season anyways. There are names out there. It's just a question of whether they would be willing to come here. Claude Julien doesn't have a coaching job right now. He certainly has pedigree around the league, respect around the league. But again, it's a question of if it's a fit, if the team sees it as a fit, if the coaching candidate sees it as a fit as well. Langley Fun Guy texts in, I don't think it's all on Green, but if you want the most out of your players, you need to put them in a situation that best suits the specific player in order to provide individual and team success. Travis doesn't let these changes grow and mature into success. He expects success immediately upon throwing a line together. Just let the line stay together at least till the third if you're down, but not 10 minutes into the game. That's from Langley Fun Guy.
That's how everyone does it, man.
That's something that comes in a lot, right? Oh, he's throwing the lines in a blender. But I feel like every coach in the NHL has the reputation for throwing the lines in a blender. Also, like, lines get changed.
Also, he stuck forever with Pearson, Horvat, Garland this season because he wanted to let them have chemistry build. Meanwhile, nothing else was working around them, and they weren't working either. You know, so it's like, it's a tough balance. Like, How quickly do you change versus how much do you let continuity reign? And when I think about the last three seasons, you know, when I've been covering the team day to day, lines have stayed the same forever, right?
Like, yes.
Changes have been slow more than anything, right? Like, the Lotto line played together forever. Louis Erickson on Horvat's wing. You know, like, we've seen him stick with things. Gaudette with Virtanen and Roussel. Like, we've seen these lines be relatively stable. You know, if anything, I feel like 2 years ago we were having conversations about how Green wasn't reactive enough to changing things. and then we saw him in the playoffs, and things were changing all the time. He was running out different lineups for every period, and it worked. And then you're a genius, right? I mean, fundamentally, they're losing games, so the heat is on. I get it. I don't think it's going to be a real conversation or a real consideration internally for at least a month, probably a little bit longer. And I think Green has a fair bit more rope than you'd expect or than an average coach in this situation would, just because of the way that the organization is set up, the fact that he's just been extended. And, you know, I think the internal politics of the thing.
And I think it ultimately also comes down to what the internal expectations at the very top level of the franchise are,
of
right?
Course.
If it's we have to do everything humanly possible to make the playoffs, then obviously at some point his job does become in jeopardy if they're not living up to that standard, right? But if the expectation is even slightly lower than that and there are other priorities that play into it, then, as you said, the rope becomes a lot longer, the potential for him to survive becomes a lot greater as well. Lots more text coming in. We appreciate all of the feedback. I did want to follow up on something that we talked about quite a bit yesterday on the show, Drancer, which is, of course, the Chicago Blackhawks, the Brad Aldrich, Kyle Beach, Joel Quenneville, the entire situation that that really came out on Wednesday with the Kyle Beach interview with Rick Westhead. And just to follow up, it was announced recently that the Hockey Hall of Fame has consulted with the NHL, with Gary Bettman, with Bill Daly, and that Brad Aldrich's name is going to be removed from the Stanley Cup. And that was done at the request from the Chicago Blackhawks after there was kind of a public outcry in that direction, demanding that some sort of step like that is taken. So there is your update. Brad Aldrich's name will be removed from the Stanley Cup. And this is just another example for me, Drancer, where I'm glad that it's happening. I think it's fair. I might have opted for the X's through instead of completely erasing it.
Yeah,
just because,
I like that concept. I thought my colleague at The Athletic, Sean McIndoe, made a powerful argument that that was actually a more lasting punishment. Plus, it would deface the 2009-10 Blackhawks entry, which should, I mean, I liked that option best.
Yeah, I agree.
It does undermine their accomplishment. Like, the fact is that this will always be attached to what that Blackhawks team accomplished. And that's right. Like, they made a decision to pursue short-term glory over doing what was evidently the right thing and protecting, you know, someone whom they had a duty of responsibility to protect. So, yeah, I mean, I look, removing the name is fine, but the Blackhawks never should have allowed that name to go on the cup anyway. And so, you know, whatever. I mean, it is what it is.
This entire episode, whatever you want to call it, it tarnishes the legacy of that win, of that franchise, of those teams.
And
right?
of everyone involved, yeah. personally.
And doing the X's through the name would have reflected that. It would have been a physical representation of them sullying their own legacy, right?
100%.
Erasing it, I'm not saying it's a disastrous move to erase it, because I still think it accomplishes something, and at least it's a step, but it does allow it to fly under the radar more than defacing his name on the Stanley Cup would have. The other thing I just wanted to say is it's great that they're doing something to address it, but I always am concerned that everyone involved, the Blackhawks, the NHL, the Hockey Hall of Fame, is looking at, okay, this is something we can do to make the conversation go away, right? We can say, oh, hey, we erased the name from the Stanley Cup. There, we did it. See how seriously we're taking it? And while I applaud the move and while I think it's the right move, I'm always so concerned that they are going to act as if this closes the matter somehow, right? Yeah. And I think, you know, we saw that somehow Kevin Cheveldayoff is not going to receive any punishment from the NHL. That's after Joel Quenneville resigned, and it was a resignation, but he's also effectively banned from the NHL until Gary Bettman says otherwise, so that's a complicated situation. It's
a de facto expulsion.
Yes.
It's an expulsion with legalese underpinning it, and, you know, Jamie, you went to law school, so you understand that implicitly, right? The punishment for Quenneville, I thought, was fitting. The Cheveldayoff thing, I mean, I hope the NHL says more than the statement that they have issued to this point, because I don't quite understand. Like, I get that he wasn't as responsible as a coach, president, or general manager, because he was an assistant general manager, but at the very least, he is clearly...
He's like, in the power structure.
He's responsible for his counsel.
Yeah.
And if your counsel wasn't WTF, right, then you drop the ball. Then you drop the ball.
And as I understand it, 6 of the 7 people in that meeting are no longer employed in the NHL, and a lot of them, they're not going to be allowed back unless Gary Bettman says so. So
yeah, unless they discuss the conditions under which that employment would continue.
Like, how the 7th is not only avoids that fate specifically, but avoids any punishment whatsoever is surprising to me. So I agree with you. I hope that the NHL does come out and address that. And as I said, it's up to all of us fans, certainly us with a platform in the media, to, okay, when somebody does take accountability, that's great. We can applaud it. We can commend it, but also we can't let something like, you know, erasing Brad Aldrich's name from the Stanley Cup let us think that this matter is closed, that there has been appropriate accountability, appropriate remorse, anything like that. It's a good step, but there's a ton more that needs to be done.
A really good point.
That's going to do it for the Canucks Hour for today and for this week as well. Man, we just had tons and tons of feedback coming in, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. I really appreciate all the texts. I'm sorry we can't read all of them. If we did read all of them, that would literally be the entire hour. But I appreciate everyone who texts in. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to the show. Drancer, have a great weekend, man.
You too, bud.
We will be back. Should be a
happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. I was about to say it should be a good one against the Oilers tomorrow, but with the way this team has sucked the life out of the last two games,
who knows?
Yeah. Hopefully it'll be a good one against the Oilers on Saturday night.
Always good to watch McDavid play live.
Absolutely. And we will be back on Monday to break it all down, all of the news and notes from the weekend. Enjoy your weekend. Have a great Halloween. Stay safe out there. Sportsnet Today with Bick Nizar and Israel Fair is up next on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.